politics to me is very important and personal. When I became a refugee, that was political, you know, issue. So I went through a lot in my 19 years of refugee life, and I was politically very active in refugee camp, and also when I move up here. It's also because of my education background. I have bachelor in political science from SNU and master's in international relations. So that also gave me some knowledge about, you know, U.S. politics. And after my graduation, I was looking for to involve and engage in New Hampshire politics. So I, you know, attended many town halls, small political clutches, and also rallies. So there were many candidates in the field, but someone, you know, I found who I found very, very close to, very attached to, and captivated me towards, you know, this individual, and that is Bernie Sanders.
We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom, symbolizing an end as well as a beginning, signifying renewal as well as change.
Today we are going to talk about New Hampshire as part of a special mini-series we are doing on the Model Majority Podcast to profile the four early states in the Democratic primary from the perspective of Asian American staffers currently working on a presidential campaign in one of these states. And today I am delighted to welcome Suraj Buddhatoki, who is the constituency director in New Hampshire for the Bernie Sanders campaign. Suraj is a co-founder and a former executive director of Building Community in New Hampshire, which is a nonprofit serving refugee and immigrant populations. As a former refugee from Bhutan, he also founded the International Campaign for Human Rights in Bhutan and is a member of the Conduct Board for the City of Manchester. Suraj, welcome to the Model Majority Podcast today.
Hey, Kevin. Thank you. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to come to your podcast.
Thank you. The pleasure is ours. So let's start by talking actually about how you settled in New Hampshire from Bhutan by way of Nepal, I believe, as a refugee. How did that story came about?
Well, that is, I think, 19 years of the story. But let me be brief. Yes, I was born in Bhutan. So it's a very small country in between, you know, India and China. So many Western countries or people, they might not know about Bhutan. Well, if they know it, it is the happiest country on earth, the youngest democracy or the last Shangri-La on earth. But, you know, as you know, I was one of the refugees from Bhutan, and that negates everything what we understood as, you know, as Bhutan. So in 1990s, when Bhutan, the government of Bhutan, you know, changes many sensitive laws and expelled me, my family, and more than 100,000 ethnic Nepalese from Bhutan who were Bhutanese citizens. So I landed up in Bhutan, in Nepal. So beginning from 1990s to 2009, I was in refugee camp in Nepal. So I don't have to explain you the hardship, the problem that, you know, refugees go through in their, you know, refugee life or in their camp. But in 2007, when United States, you know, came up with the idea of resettling about 60,000 Buddhist refugees to the United States, that gave me sort of hope to rebuild my life in America. So it wasn't my choice to come to the United States, but the interviewers thought that I could live my life in Atlanta, Georgia, so they sent me to Atlanta. Hmm. So that was, that wasn't my choice, but come to New Hampshire was my own choice. So I was working two full-time jobs with $725 per hour, night shift job and day shift. So with $25 per hour wasn't enough for me to support my family, paying rent and all those things. And also my parents were in refugee camp in Nepal, so I needed to help them. So I was looking, you know, better place where I can at least, you know, utilize my education and go to college and, you know, support my family. So that's how I found New Hampshire, you know, better place for me. So now my wife, I knew her from refugee camp, and I married her, and I moved up here to New Hampshire. So now I have two. Yeah, it's a big, long story. Now I am, you know, a business owner, small business owner. My wife and I run our business.
I'm sure we can do an entire podcast episode just on those history, right? Which I'm sure is incredibly trying. And like you said, there has been kind of a stereotype of Bhutan from the Western world that is this, like, I don't know, happy Shangri-La place, but clearly terrible things, you know, human rights violation and, you know, ethnic persecution, it seems like it's very much happening, as you have experienced. And I'm just curious, one point is that how did you knew anybody in New Hampshire before you moved up there? Was there a support network or enclave of folks that you already knew that gave you the idea that it was a better place for me to settle than Atlanta?
Well, I was aware that, you know, currently my wife was here, but I knew her as, you know, our my friend in refugee camp. So when I move up here and we settle down, you know, here in New Hampshire itself.
I see. Got it.
So I knew her.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I want to kind of switch gear to current, you know, event and maybe learn more about the backstory of how you decided to, I guess, number one, just be part of American politics in general. Mm-hmm. But also, why did you decide to join the Sanders campaign to work for the Bernie Sanders campaign in New Hampshire right now?
Absolutely. So, you know, politics to me is very important and personal. When I became a refugee, that was political, you know, issue. So I went through a lot in my 19 years of refugee life, and I was politically very active in refugee camp, and also when I move up here. It's also because of my education background. I have bachelor in political science from SNU and master's in international relations. So that also gave me some knowledge about, you know, U.S. politics. And after my graduation, I was looking for to involve and engage in New Hampshire politics. So I, you know, attended many town halls, small political clutches, and also rallies. So there were many candidates in the field, but someone, you know, I found who I found very, very close to, very attached to, and captivated me towards, you know, this individual, and that is Bernie Sanders. So it is like his, you know, childhood, my childhood, his struggle at his, you know, childhood and my struggle in refugee camp were not that different. I struggle for my, you know, for survival every day in refugee camp, you know, looking for medication. I was nearly dead in refugee camp because my parents were not able to go outside refugee camp to see a doctor. And I struggled for clean water in refugee camp. I drank water from kennel, dirty water, and I survived. So I know hunger. I lived without food for days and days in refugee camp. So when I heard Bernie Sanders talking about all of these issues that millions and millions of Americans are facing today, I found someone, you know, like Bernie Sanders, very important to me in my life. So that's how I involved. Yeah.
Got it. And, you know, since you've been involved, you know, at least as a volunteer, as a citizen, living in New Hampshire many, many years, you know, mm-hmm. this year, of course, you're actually working on a campaign. I'd love to hear your thoughts and description of New Hampshire as a state, specifically from the point of view of a political nerd angle. Like, what is kind of weird or interesting or special about doing politics in New Hampshire that is different from any other state?
Yeah, well, this is a very interesting question. From, you know, Asian American perspective or myself working this campaign is in New Hampshire is, you know, New Hampshire is, you know, one of the most educated states, you know. So people don't tend to make their decisions right away. They want to at least meet candidate. They want to read their books, if any. They want to attend the town halls, and then only they will make decision at the end. So that is unique in New Hampshire. The other thing is, New Hampshire it's a small state and it is sparsely populated. Some of the towns and counties are very sparsely populated, and it is somewhat very, hard to travel to those, towns and counties and canvas. So other interesting thing is New Hampshire state in the Congress, state representative is Congress is the largest Congress in the United States. It has 400 House of Representatives, and obviously they have, very experienced. They are very experienced, and they know politics, and they're obviously educated, and they don't make decisions right away. They want to meet, they want to, talk to candidates, and they want to do some research, and then only they will support, candidates.
Yeah, I remember the New Hampshire, I think, state House representative, like being 400 and change members. That means like every member is representing like only like several hundred or several thousand residents, right? Which is like a very small ratio, or like a high ratio, right? Mm-hmm. Like everyone actually knows everybody.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. We do that. And also we meet, every candidate, and I mean, every House of Representatives or senators here and there in shopping mall and, everywhere.
Right. Right. So kind of given that characteristic of a small state, not so populated, but also everyone, I think, mm-hmm. takes this responsibility very seriously. They take a very long time and they spend a lot of energy looking at candidates. And, this year of all years, we have so many candidates. Does that make it easier or harder for you from a campaign perspective to kind of have to cater to this audience and their need for more information or more access or more question time for the candidates or the campaign?
Well, I think Senator Sanders is not new in this political field. He has been here for decades and decades, and people know what he's fighting for. And he was one of the candidates in 2016, and that also made easier for us to go to the field. And also, the one important thing that we have, or Bernie Sanders' campaign has, is the committee that we have, steering committee, and they were from 2016. So the important that we have that is now we're able to reach out to those community, those members that they know, they worked, they canvassed in 2016. So it's not that difficult because of having a lot of candidates in the field.
I see. So he kind of has a foundation there already.
Mm-hmm, already. Yeah, but I should tell you one in a challenge that that I, as Asian American, facing this campaign is, as you know, New Hampshire is a less diverse state. So, when I go to canvas or talk to people, and when they, hear different accent, they believe that, oh no, this is, I think, it's calling from India or Nepal, and he's not a real guy. So that's the that mostly I heard over the phone. But when I go to people from Asian American, community, they are more receptive. They, ask many questions, and I will be welcome there. So that is, I think, one of the challenges that I do face while canvassing or doing phone calls in this campaign.
That's interesting. I want to follow up on that, Suraj. That was one of the questions I wanted to explore more with you, is as an Asian American, as a South Asian American, a Bhutanese American, how has that identity and that heritage kind of impacted or changed the way you approach campaigning or organizing, or just the way you interact with voters or even volunteers on your own campaign? You touched on it a little bit, but I'd love to hear more stories or even like strategy in your head, and like how do you get around these sort of things, right, that you were talking about?
Well, I can give you one own example right in our office. So I have a lot of good relationship with ethnic community leaders. So when I give their name to the staff here, and when they call them, they would not receive their call, or they would not be open to discuss about their political belief or opinion. So they refer to me as this individual is not opening up with us. So could you talk to him? So that's one of the things. And other thing is meeting with individuals and organizing meeting. So what happened was when Representative Rokhanna was here in New Hampshire, I was able to organize a successful house party. So as this was for new American. We targeted only 50 people, but it was the participants were more than 85 or 90 people. So this is how the receptive, you know, people from Asian American, when I invite them, when I go to them, but which is different in other community.
I see. And I think like your background sometimes could be the door, right, or the entryway into certain communities that are typically a bit closed off to the political dialogue, right? Like our communities, exactly, in Asian Americans, we don't really get reached out that much, so we don't probably even feel comfortable sharing a lot of these political thoughts unless, mm-hmm, someone like you perhaps call me as opposed to somebody else.
Exactly.
And so I want to talk about your job specifically. So your title, okay, is the constituency director. A lot of our listeners are, you know, young listeners, college grads, millennials who are interested in politics but probably have never worked on one or volunteered in one.
Okay.
What is a constituency director? Like, what is your job?
Well, it is mostly talking to different elected officials. We have New Hampshire Democratic town chairs, town committees, and county committees. So my work, my job is to reach out to those individuals and get their support to Bernie Sanders. And there are many other ethnic non-profit organizations in New Hampshire. They have leaders, and they are community leaders. And my work, my job is to go to those organizations, you know, share Bernie Sanders' policies, ideas, and get their support. So mostly, my work is to travel, talk to those people, bring their support, and call them, and rally behind Bernie Sanders' policy. That is, you know, my day.
I see. So is that kind of how your day-to-day looks like? Like, is there a typical day from dawn to dusk as a constituency director? Like, do you drive a lot most of the time or do a lot of calls? Like, what does it look like?
Well, I think it's 50-50. Drive a lot, meet people, and phone calls. But when Senator Sanders and surrogates, you know, are here in New Hampshire, the days would look very different. I need to, you know, if Senator Sanders is meeting people in Nashua, so I should be calling people in Nashua, you know, and trying to find out places there, and who do I need to call for clutches and all those things when Senator Sanders and surrogates are here. But typically other days it's like, you know, calling people, talk to them, meet them over coffee, and, you know, seek their support.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Got it. And I want to talk to you a little bit about technology as well. As mm-hmm. you know, technology has had a huge impact on how campaigns are run, executed, and even won in the end for, you know, good or bad reasons. I'm curious, you know, in 2019, now 2020, what are some of the interesting tech, if at all, that you use in a day in or day out basis to do your job well? Or is there still a lot of, like, you know, flipboards and clipboards and envelopes and very like old style campaign tools, which is kind of what I'm used to before?
Well, I think obviously we bring into use of emails and phone calls, but what Senator Sanders' campaign is unique one, and we call it Burn App. So this is, I think, the unique one. Other campaign, I don't think they have it. This is only one that we have in this campaign. So what it does is it's app. You know, it's a normal app. For example, I have friends in other states or here in other cities. So what I do is I type their name, and if they are my friend, I will take them my friend or families or acquaintances, anything like that, and then submit it. So friends, if he is from Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, so someone from Columbus, Ohio will contact that individual and you know, involve and engage him in the campaign. So that is, I think, one of the unique technology that we're using at this campaign.
Got it. So this is an app that anyone can download on their phone if they want to be a part of the Bernie Sanders campaign to help out in some way?
Absolutely, yes.
Got it. So to kind of wrap up our conversation, Suraj, I'd love to hear maybe just one piece of advice, having lived in New Hampshire for so long, having been politically active there for so long. What is your one piece of advice for anybody who wants to do well in New Hampshire politics? Does it have to be president, can be, you know, mayor or Congress or whatever level of government? What is your one piece of advice?
That would be... in every corner, that is House Party or New Hampshire Democratic Party town committee or county committee meeting. Involve, meet people. If you want to run for office, anything, high or low, you should know the people. You should engage with the people, and you should be open-minded when you share your ideas with the people.
Got it. So, Suraj, where can people find you or the Sanders campaign? Where should people follow your work if they want to, you know, continue along on this journey?
Are you asking me about my social media?
Sure. If you do social media. If you don't, you can certainly just plug the Sanders social media, too.
Well, I do share a lot of Senator Sanders videos and tweets. I mean, tweets, but I think Suraj 8 is my tweet. Twitter account, and I think people can find me in Facebook, Suraj Brataki. That's my Facebook name.
Got it. Well, Suraj, thank you so much for chatting with me today and for educating me and our audience on how it works in New Hampshire presidential politics. Thank you so much for your time today.
And last one thing before we leave, our listener, if you want to learn about Bernie Sanders, you know, please go to BernieSanders.com.
Of course, BernieSanders.com, yeah. For everybody who is interested in the Senators campaign as we get closer and closer to Election Day in the New Hampshire primary. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.